Welcome to Morbidology, the podcast. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders, Cults Uncovered, and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. Join me weekly as I uncover some of the world's most heinous murders. Hatteras Drive in Hudson, Florida, backs onto picturesque canals, leading to the Gulf of Mexico. Many residents of this quaint neighborhood have docks and boats out the back of their homes, while fish shacks are peppered throughout the neighborhoods. Many retirees live in the area and live a simple and quiet life. However, in 2014, their idyll was shattered when four bodies were discovered piled on top of one another in their neighborhood, and it was soon discovered that a four-year-old boy was missing. It was the 4th of September 2014 when officers were called to conduct a welfare check at a home at 7719 Hatteras Drive in Hudson, Florida, after the family living at the home had not been seen in over a week. When they arrived on the scene, nobody appeared to be home. However, the officers soon noticed a putrid smell emanating from down the street. In the sky, birds were circling over a spot nearby, so officers decided that they would investigate. As they walked towards the smell, they discovered the bodies of four adults. Two men and two women. The bodies were piled up on top of each other in a field around 3/4 of a mile down the road from the home. It was evident that the bodies had been in the baking Florida sun for several days and decomposition had already begun, hence the smell. However, these four bodies were not immediately identified. Instead, investigators announced that 4-year-old Ismael Tristan Santesteban was missing. They additionally announced that Tristan was somehow related to the four victims, but would not elaborate any further. Tristan had special needs, so it was all the more imperative to find him quickly. Straight away, investigators announced that Tristan may have been with a 38-year-old man named Adam Matos, who they described as likely being armed and dangerous. They additionally announced that Adam was from Pennsylvania, where he had a long criminal history, including harassment, theft, burglary, trespassing, assault, and driving under the influence. Adam had pleaded guilty to a number of the charges, while others had been dismissed. They said that they were not sure if Adam was Tristan's father or a family friend. According to Chris Nocco of the Pasco County Sheriff's Office, as I said, we have two cases going on. One is a missing person, the other is homicide. We're missing a little child. That is our biggest concern right now. An Amber Alert was issued, detailing the case and the identity of Tristan and Adam, describing Tristan as a white Hispanic male, standing at 3 feet 2 inches tall, 35 pounds, with brown hair and brown eyes. It described Adam as a white male, around 6 feet tall, 175 pounds, with brown hair and brown eyes. The Amber Alert also included a description of a 90s model F-150 that they believed Adam was driving. However, shortly thereafter, the car was discovered abandoned. Just the following day, Tristan and Adam were found. Thankfully, Tristan had not been harmed. SWAT teams from the Pasco County Sheriff's Office and Tampa Police Department swarmed the Floridian Hotel in downtown Tampa after they managed to track Adam down. During the investigation, investigators had received a number of tips from people who had seen Adam and Tristan. They had spoken to taxi companies and discovered that Adam had taken a taxi into Tampa and was spotted at the bus station trying to catch a bus to the Florida Keys. There were no buses available, so Adam checked into the nearby hotel. They were able to lure Adam out of the hotel room by pretending that there was an issue with the power and the Wi-Fi and that a room switch was needed. Adam was arrested without incident, while Tristan was taken to safety. While in the police car, the young boy asked where he was going and asked why he kept getting moved from place to place. Captain Jeff Peake said, "Probably one of the best days of my career, seeing that little boy come out of the room."
I can tell you, to our citizens out there, thank you for your thoughts and prayers. Thank God Tristan is okay. Due to a team effort with law enforcement agencies throughout the Tampa Bay region, federally, locally, and throughout our country, you know, we found this little boy. He is alive, he is well, and he's in the city of Tampa right now. And the good thing is, he's in the care of the sheriff's office, the police department. He will be taken care of. As for the case of Adam Matos, he is where he should be, in handcuffs right now. The other things we can tell you right now is he is our suspect for the homicide of the four individuals. Unfortunately, we cannot still give out their names. We are still confirming. It was a horrific scene that we had out there. And, you know, we're 99% sure we know who they are. However, we have to make sure through test DNA that we have those individuals, and we will release those names when we can.
With Tristan now safe, investigators announced that Tristan was Adam's son. Up until now, absolutely no information regarding the relationship between the two or between either one and the four victims had been released. Many had speculated that this was a robbery gone wrong or a completely random attack, but seemingly, it was much more complex than that. The victims would be identified as 27-year-old Megan Brown, her boyfriend, Nicholas Leonard, and her parents, Maggie and Greg Brown. Megan was Adam's ex-girlfriend and the mother of Tristan. As Adam was transferred to jail, he was peppered with questions from the media.
Adam, what do you have to say about the allegations against
you? Did you kill those four people?
I don't have anything to say right now.
Why did you take Tristan?
Is this all a big misunderstanding?
I don't have anything to say right now.
What were your plans?
Why did you do this?
I don't have anything to say.
What about your son? What are your concerns about him right now?
I love my son, and I hope that he's safe right now.
Why did you take him?
He's my son.
What happened? What happened with the family?
I don't have anything to say right now.
Did you kill those four people?
No.
You didn't kill them?
No.
Who did?
I don't know.
Why were you running away?
I don't have anything to say right now.
Where were you going?
To go?
Can you tell us where you were going?
Can't tell you.
Yes. Push through.
When Megan gave birth to Tristan, she named him after Ismail Santastiban, who was Megan's boyfriend at the time of the birth. In fact, Ismail had signed Tristan's birth certificate, even though they both knew that Adam was most likely his biological father. There was seemingly a crossover between Adam and Ismail. However, when Tristan was born, they didn't want to get a DNA test because neither Megan or Ismail cared, because they loved one another and were going to be a family regardless of who the biological father was. Several months after the birth, however, Megan and Adam went behind Ismail's back and obtained a DNA test, which showed that Adam was in fact the biological father of Tristan, not Ismail. Upon discovering this, Megan broke up with Ismail and went back to Adam. Megan and Adam had met around 6 years prior, and over the course of those 6 years, they were on and off most of the time. The relationship was volatile, and they often argued over their respective treatment of Tristan. Just several days before the discovery of the bodies, on the 28th of August, officers had been called to the home for a domestic situation.
Tell me exactly what happened, Megan.
My son's dad, I just came home, and my son's dad put a knife to my throat, and he cut my hand, and I'm like bleeding everywhere, and my son's freaking out. I really don't want to do this in front of him, but he just put a knife to my throat.
Where is he at?
He took off.
Okay, when did that occur?
My son woke up. He did this in my son's room, and my son woke up.
Okay, and he, ma'am, he cut your hand with the knife?
Yes. Okay. I'm bleeding everywhere.
Okay, and that's the father of your son?
Yes.
Give me a time delay, okay, of when that happened, when he cut you with the knife.
He just did it 10 minutes ago.
Okay, 10 minutes?
Yep.
Okay, what is his name?
Adam Matos, A-D-A-M-M-A-T-O-S.
Okay, well, how old is he?
He's 28.
28? Okay.
It was a space knife.
Do you think he'll be violent with law enforcement officers?
Violent?
Yes, ma'am.
I have no idea. This is the first time he's ever actually tried to kill me.
You guys had some kind of argument, or what was going on?
We haven't been together for weeks now because he doesn't do anything.
Uh-huh.
And I went out with my friends, and I came home at like 5 in the morning, and he got all pissed off, and he was drinking. And he just put a knife right to my throat and said he was going to fucking kill me.
Megan had called police, informing them that Adam had held a knife to her throat. Megan informed police she arrived home that morning at 5:30 a.m. after a night out with her new boss and Leonard. Inside, she found Adam in her bedroom. He was heavily intoxicated and was drinking a beer. He demanded to know where she had been and who she had been with. Megan attempted to de-escalate the situation by going into Tristan's bedroom, but Adam followed her, held a knife to her throat, and said, "I'll fucking kill you." Megan managed to push Adam away, cutting her thumb on the knife. The argument stopped when Tristan woke up. By the time police arrived, Adam had already left the home on a bicycle. The officers spoke with Megan and she informed them that she was terrified of Adam. According to her mother and father, she and Adam had always fought, but Adam lived with them because he had nowhere else to go. According to the police report, due to the fact that there were no witnesses to the incident, I request this report be pended back to me pending contact with Matos. The officer gave Megan a victim's right booklet and the officer's contact information. This date was the last date that anybody had seen the Brown family, which led investigators to theorize that after police left, Adam came back. The family had only recently moved to Florida from Orfield, Pennsylvania. According to neighbors back in Pennsylvania, the family were good and decent people. Sam Azar, who had known the family for years, said that they were friendly and always willing to help. He said, "In the winter, they would plow our driveway without even asking." Back when the family lived in Pennsylvania, Maggie and Greg had operated Hidden Hill Farm, a dog kennel. Michael Davis, one of their neighbors of 12 years, said that when he discovered that they were moving to Florida, he was surprised because it seemed so out of the blue. When the family moved to Florida just a few months earlier, they settled in nicely. They were looking forward to shopping in Miami, spending summers in the Florida Keys, and just enjoying the sunshine. Maggie posted on her Facebook on the 26th of August, "I am sitting under this lovely tree on a dock in the mangrove. Fish are jumping, breeze is blowing, sun is shining, and I am with my husband of so many years. Perfect day for an anniversary." Megan got a job as a bartender at Fisherman's Shack, a bar just down the road from where the family lived. She was known to be a good worker and was sharp and friendly. She always spoke about Tristan and referred to him as her little man. According to those who knew her, Megan was an amazing mother who always worked hard to provide the best life for her son. It was here that Megan met Nicholas, who was a longtime Hudson resident, and he was immediately smitten. According to his neighbour, Joan Watjan, "When he came over here to do some work for me one day, he told me he found the girl of his dreams and showed me her picture." The living arrangement was certainly strange, to say the least. Megan, Adam, and her parents were living in the home despite the fact that Megan and Adam had broken up. Despite this, it didn't deter Nicholas. However, they had tried to keep the relationship secret so that Adam would not find out. They had agreed to wait for Adam to move out of the home before going public with their relationship, but somehow, Adam found out. According to those who knew the family, Adam had lived separately to the family. While they sat outside or watched television, Adam would be holed up in his bedroom playing video games on his own. He had worked briefly as a dishwasher at a restaurant, but was fired after he stopped showing up. Megan's colleagues said that Adam was aggressive and rude, and that he constantly phoned Megan and sent her nasty text messages, telling her that she was a bad mother. Nicholas was known to be cheerful and kind. He lived in a ranch-style home on Woodchuck Way in Hudson. He was a self-employed handyman who frequently helped out his neighbours with any home improvements. One neighbour, Melissa Merrin, said, "You met him. 5 minutes later, he was your best friend." Nicholas was extremely close with his parents, and his dad, Daniel, was his best friend. As mentioned briefly earlier, Adam had an extensive criminal record, which stemmed back to when he was a student at Parkland High School in Allentown, Pennsylvania. In 1999, he was charged with possession of marijuana. Several months later, he was charged as a juvenile with 2 counts of auto theft. In 2001, he went to a juvenile detention facility near Harrisburg for 18 months after he pleaded guilty to felony burglary charges, following a crime spree in his neighbourhood which had lasted 2 months. It was estimated that Adam had stolen around $26,000 worth of goods. In 2007, he was charged with assault and trespassing after he broke into the apartment of a woman he dated 18 months earlier. When the woman returned home, Adam attacked the man she was with before stealing her mobile phone and keys. Adam was subsequently arrested 4 more times in Lehigh County between 2008 and 2010 on charges of retail theft, drunken driving, and harassment. On the 6th of September, following the murders, Adam appeared in court where a judge set his bond at $200,000. The brutal murders stunned both the community in Florida's Gulf Coast as well as the community in rural Lehigh County, Pennsylvania. Edward Shane, who was a neighbour of the family back in Pennsylvania, said, "You can't even put it into words. I'm almost in tears because it's so senseless. I'm heartbroken." The family and loved ones of the murder victims were completely shattered. Megan and Leonard were just starting out in a new chapter of their lives, while Maggie and Greg were set to enjoy their retirement. And now, they had all been senselessly murdered, and Tristan was left without a family. When Adam was questioned about the earlier threats he had made to Megan, he claimed it was nothing more than an argument. From jail, Adam staunchly denied that he had committed the murders and denied that he had held a knife to Megan's throat earlier on.
I mean, can you tell me anything about that domestic violence? Because, you know, she said that you put a knife to her back into the corner of the room. I mean, what's your side of that?
That's not what happened.
What happened?
We just had a disagreement about something and pretty much told me to leave. And I left.
What were you guys disagreeing about?
I can't remember, you know, but something dumb, probably.
And that was the last time you saw her?
Yeah, that was the last time I talked to her. I was shocked to see the SWAT team there. I couldn't believe the SWAT team was there.
At that point, you didn't know that everybody had been killed up in Hudson?
No, I didn't know.
Did they tell you?
Yeah, they told me. They told me later that day.
And what did they tell you? And how did they tell you?
They were just telling me that, you know, all this stuff happened, and I didn't know what to think. I didn't know how to react to this, you know. This is all new.
Leonard's family gathered at the Pasco County Sheriff's Office to address the media about the murders. Michael Shoup, the boyfriend of Leonard's sister, spoke on behalf of the family, who were much too distraught to speak. He said, "It's still early and we are just taking time to be together and remember the good times and not what happened." He described how Leonard and Megan had only recently started dating and nobody in the family had even met Adam. Adam's own family were quick to make a statement and announced that they did not believe the allegations, despite the fact that Adam had a lengthy history of violence. His aunt, Nancy Maddow, said, "I know Adam. Adam doesn't have a heart like that." When presented with his criminal record, she said, "None of us are perfect." Real paper are creating bamboo toilet paper that not only does good, but feels good as well. I'm lucky enough that they've sponsored this episode of Morbidology. Every single day, 2.4 billion people are forced to defecate outside, meaning lost dignity, exposure to deadly pathogens, increased risk of contaminated water, and even loss of life. That's why Real Paper are on a mission to provide much-needed access to clean toilets to those without. By purchasing a roll of Real Paper, not only are you getting an amazing product and reducing your carbon footprint, but you're also supporting their mission in helping those in need. Real Paper is made from 100% bamboo, is plastic-free, and is delivered right to your doorstep. They have partnered with Soil, a non-profit research and development organization working in Haiti, to provide sustainable and cost-effective solutions to the sanitation crisis. They donate a portion of each sale and give back 100% of any direct donations on Soil's behalf. So click the link in my show notes or head to realpaper.com, that is reelpaper.com, and enter Morbidology for 25% off your order. Shortly thereafter, Adam himself made a few statements to the Tampa Bay Times from behind bars. He referred to himself as a nice guy, easy to get along with, and claimed that he was just at the wrong place at the wrong time. He said, "Everybody's looking at me like I did it. All the fingers point to me, you know. So I'm not going to change anybody's beliefs." Adam also offered up a new theory as for who killed Megan, Nicholas, Margaret, and Greg.
There was a woman that kept calling and showing up around the house. I don't know what her name is or who she is, but there was like threats being made from this lady, and like letters being sent like back and forth. I guess she left letters or something like that at Megan's job, and I guess the lady called her job, accusing her of different things like taking drugs and stuff like that. So I don't know who this lady is or what her intentions are.
Adam claimed that a woman had been stalking Megan and had been leaving her threatening letters and voicemails. He also claimed that the woman confronted Megan at her family home. However, he said that he never got a chance to look at the woman, nor did he know her name, but said that she had stalked Leonard as well.
"Well, I'm a nice guy. You know, anybody that knows me, I'm easily to get along with. I don't start fights, you know. I'm pretty much, you know, cool person to get along with. And everybody's looking at me like, you know, like I did it, you know. It's nothing I can say to change anybody's mind. You know, I could say I'm innocent, and I could say I didn't do it, but or is anybody really going to believe me?"
When questioned about the time frame from when he left the home after the argument and when he was arrested at the hotel, Adam couldn't offer much of an explanation. He said that he lived on the streets for a few days, but then said he couldn't divulge any more information at the advice of his attorney. When asked how or when he took Tristan, Adam couldn't reply. When asked why the sheriff's office pointed towards him as the only suspect, he said he didn't know. In court documents, the woman who allegedly stalked Leonard was named Michelle Stinson. In regards to the documents, Michelle said, "I don't even know what to say to that." Michelle was Leonard's ex-girlfriend who had moved to Kansas when they broke up. However, she had wanted to keep in touch and she quite often called the bar where Megan worked and where Leonard was a regular and asked the owner whether Leonard was there and if so, who he was with. According to the bar manager, when she discovered that Leonard was dating Megan, she would often ring Megan as well. Court records showed even more serious problems. In July of 2010, Leonard had filed for a domestic violence injunction against Michelle, even though she was living in Kansas. In the petition, Leonard had written, "She has hacked into my bank accounts, emails, cell phone, and all other mediums containing my personal information. She has people calling and threatening me. I have her on tape." Leonard had also said that Michelle had contacted his family and told them that he had ended his life. While Adam probably knew about Michelle and knew that she had been harassing Leonard and Megan, there was no evidence to indicate that she was involved in the murders, and Adam remained the main suspect. When it was discovered that Megan had called police before she vanished to report Adam's threats, many questioned if more could have been done to prevent the murders. Sheriff Chris Nocco released a statement which said that they were confident that the deputy and other officers who had attended the scene did everything that they could and correctly followed procedures in handling the domestic violence complaint. They had searched the area for Adam after he fled the home on his bicycle and then returned the following day to search further. According to the sheriff, he did go out looking for this guy again because he needed to get his response too. You can't just arrest someone on someone's allegation. You need to get that person's side of the story. 2 days before the bodies were discovered, the deputy had written a supplement to the original report saying that he still had not located Adam and that Megan had not contacted him to say that Adam had returned. The sheriff's office did not issue a be on the lookout for Adam, and according to the sheriff, it was common to not issue be on the lookout for such cases. He said that the situation was handled the way the majority of domestic violence reports are. On the 14th of September, Adam was charged with 4 counts of murder. Up until now, he had just been charged with domestic violence from the earlier incident. The sheriff's office also revealed for the first time a detailed report on the murders, including information on how the victims had died. Megan had died of a gunshot wound to the head. Greg had died of a gunshot wound to the torso. Maggie was discovered with a bag over her head and had died of blunt force trauma to the head and asphyxiation. And Nicholas had died of blunt force trauma to the head. They also revealed that it was Maggie's stepmother who had asked police to conduct a welfare check on the family. When the officers arrived at the family's home to find it empty, they smelled decomposition coming from the garage. Inside, they discovered a large amount of blood behind a silver Dodge Caravan, as well as several large rugs and blankets that were stained in blood and covered in maggots. They discovered the bodies in a field, almost a mile down the road. It was evident from the search warrant that this had been a planned attack. Evidence recovered from the home included zip ties, duct tape, Clorox, a mop, pruning shears, a shovel, hand sanitizer, paper towels, and plastic bags. In the canal behind the home, a dive team had discovered 8 rifles, 2 knives, a hammer, a drill bit, 2 drills, and crossbows. It was theorized that Megan, Nicholas, Greg, and Maggie had been killed on the 28th of August, probably shortly after Megan had called police. According to neighbours, they had seen Adam around the family's home several times over the course of the next few days. Ryan McCann, a neighbour, told investigators that he had seen Adam every day between the 28th of August and the 3rd of September, and that between midnight and 1 a.m. on the 29th of August, he spotted Adam outside the home and he appeared to be out of breath and sweating profusely. Ryan had spoken to Adam twice, and on both occasions, he had asked where the family were. Adam had claimed that they had taken a cab to the airport and flown to West Virginia. According to another neighbour, Sharon Mann, she saw Adam spraying water in the garage on the 3rd of September, and then saw him sweeping the water outside the garage door. They also revealed during those days, Adam had sold several items from inside the family's home on Craigslist, including six dogs, which he sold at $50 each. One of the women who came to pick up one of the dogs at the Browns' household told investigators that she had noticed a foul odour. In addition, Adam had used Maggie's credit card to buy a long-handled shovel at Walmart. Then on the 1st and 2nd of September, he had ordered pizza to the family's home. The first time, he paid with Maggie's credit card, and the second time, he paid with cash. According to the pizza delivery woman, on the first day, she saw Tristan with Adam, and according to the pizza delivery man on the second day, he smelled a foul odour coming from the home, which he described as wet dog and rotten eggs. The day after the charges, Adam appeared in court once again, where he informed the judge that he could not afford his own attorney. The judge appointed the public defender's office to represent him. In mid-October, Adam pleaded not guilty to the murders and waived his right to a speedy trial. It was announced that the state would be seeking the death penalty against Adam. It wouldn't be until November of 2017 that the case was ready to go to trial. During opening statements, Assistant State Prosecutor Brian Sarabia said,
"On the morning of August 28th, 2014, this defendant, Adam Matos, threatened to kill the mother of his child, Megan Brown. And then later that day, he made good on his threat, came back and killed her, her parents, Greg and Margaret, and her new boyfriend, Nicholas Leonard. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I introduced myself, some of you, I think, I introduced myself to twice in the past few days, but my name is Brian Sarabia, and together with Chris Labruzzo and Joseph Longhorn, we are going to prove to you beyond a reasonable doubt that this defendant is guilty of murdering Megan Brown, Margaret Brown, Greg Brown, and Nicholas Leonard. Now, opening statement is my opportunity to give you sort of a table of contents of what we expect the evidence is going to show in this case. And if this case was a book, the title of the book would be, I Almost Got Away With It.
He said to the jury that the evidence would show that Adam was guilty of the four murders. He described how after the 911 call Megan had placed, Adam called her continuously throughout the day. Then at 3 p.m., the calls abruptly stopped. The last time that any of the victims were seen that day was at 11 p.m., when Maggie left work at a local convenience store. The prosecutor went on to describe how people walking in the neighborhood that night heard the sound of gunshots.
And after you hear from all the witnesses and see all the evidence in the form of pictures, videos, audios, we're going to ask you to find this defendant guilty of murder in the first degree. Guilty of murdering Margaret Brown. Guilty of murdering Nicholas Leonard. Guilty of murdering Gregory Brown. And guilty of murdering the mother of his four-year-old child, Megan Brown."
One of the first witnesses to be called to the stand was Deputy Dustin Brooks, who took the 911 call from Megan. When asked what her demeanour was like, he described Megan as being frantic. The 911 call from Megan was played out during trial, and the fear in her voice was evident.
"And my son said, put a knife to my throat and he cut my hand. I'm like bleeding everywhere and my son's freaking out. I really don't want to do this in front of him, but he just put a knife to my throat."
Jamie Martin, a forensic investigator, described how the blunt force trauma Maggie and Nicholas had sustained had most likely come from a hammer that was discovered in the canal. He showed the weapon to the jury and described how a number of weapons were discovered in the canal, including guns, power drills and drill bits. It was believed that the drills and drill bits had belonged to Nicholas. In his truck, investigators had discovered tool kits and drill bits, but was missing a drill. Jurors were next shown photographs of the guns and were taken through the bloodstains discovered inside the home. There was one large bloodstain in the master bedroom closet where the prosecution said that Greg had died. One of Greg's sons, 32-year-old Gregory Aaron Brown, was called to the witness stand to identify the weapons that were discovered in the canal behind the family's home. He detailed how his father had a keen interest in hunting and kept a number of guns locked inside the home. He identified most of the weapons as belonging to his father. The only weapon that he didn't recognise was a handgun. Jurors were next taken through the grim catalogue of injuries that the victims had sustained. Dr. Noel Palmer, a forensic pathologist with the Pinellas Pasco Medical Examiner's Office, described how he had counted 21 wounds on Nicholas's head. He had been attacked with such severity that his skull was completely shattered. Dr. Palmer said while examining Nicholas's remains, he had tried to reassemble the skull, but the bones were much too fragmented. He said that Nicholas also had a gaping injury to the skull, which could have been caused by a sharp object. He detailed how Maggie had been bound with zip ties, duct tape covered her mouth and chin, and two garbage bags were placed over her head. She had been hit over the head at least 9 times with a blunt object, most likely a hammer, and one of the skull fractures she had sustained was so severe that it would have caused death instantly. He next told the jury that Greg had sustained 2 gunshot wounds, while Megan had been shot through the eye. Adam testified on his own behalf and made the startling claim that he had committed the murders in self-defense.
Adam Matos, on August 28, 2014, did Nicholas Leonard put his hands on your throat?
Yes, he did.
Did he threaten your life with a gun?
Yes, he did.
Did you get in a fight with him?
Yes.
Did you defend yourself?
Yes, I did.
Did you kill him?
Yes.
Why?
He tried to kill me.
Adam Matos, on August 28, 2014, did Gregory Brown threaten your life?
Yes, he did.
Did he pull the trigger?
Yes.
Did you get into a shootout with him?
Yes, I did.
Did you defend yourself?
Yes.
Did you kill him?
Yes, I did.
Why?
He tried to kill me.
Adam Matos, on August 28, 2014, was Megan Brown with Nicholas Leonard when Nicholas Leonard had his hands on your throat?
Yes, she was.
Was she with Gregory Brown when he threatened your life with his rifle?
Yes, she was.
Was she with Gregory Brown when he tried to shoot you with his rifle?
Yes.
Did she say anything as he was pointing his rifle at you?
She said, "Dad, shoot him. Shoot him, Dad."
Did you defend yourself against them?
Yes.
Did you kill her?
Yes.
Why?
I felt that she was going to kill me as well.
How about Margaret Brown? Did you believe that she was trying to kill you?
Yes.
Did you fear for your life, though?
Yes.
What were your feelings when you killed her?
I was lost. I was hurt. I was in shock. I was out of my mind, and I thought that everyone was out to kill me. I felt like she was going to kill me as well.
Did you kill her?
Yes.
Did you strike her with a hammer?
Yes.
Was she bleeding a lot?
Yes.
What did you decide to do to her head?
There was a lot of blood, and to stop the blood from getting everywhere, I put a trash bag over her head.
He told the jury that after the argument with Megan, he had left to cool off. He claimed that when he came back, he noticed that the front door to the house was open. He saw Megan inside with Tristan and headed towards the bedroom to retrieve some items. It was in the bedroom that he claimed Nicholas attacked him.
Did Nicholas Leonard come up to you?
Yes.
Where did he come from?
He came from the closet area.
Were you able to see where he was coming from as far as any length of time before he got to you?
No, he just came out of nowhere.
Did he reach, I'm sorry, Did he grab you anywhere?
He grabbed me by the throat.
And did he reach for a gun?
He reached into his right pocket and he pulled out a gun and he pointed it at my chest.
Did you grab his gun?
Yes, I grabbed
his hand.
I grabbed his hand and I pointed it towards the ground away from me so he wouldn't shoot me.
Did he seem like he was trying to raise the gun toward you?
Yes.
Did you struggle to stop him from getting the gun pointed at you?
We didn't. We struggled.
Tell us what happened.
There was a lot of wrestling going on. We were going around the room. We ended up in the corner by the dresser. And I saw a knife on top of the dresser that I used to defend myself. And I stabbed him in the arm a few times. And he released his grip on my throat. And I dropped the knife. And we continued to wrestle around. I was trying to get the gun out of his hands. And we wind up falling on the bed.
And now, when you say bed, was there an actual bed frame, or was it just a mattress?
It was just a mattress on the floor.
And, okay. And it was on the floor, you said?
Yes.
How many times did you stab him?
About three times.
And you said that you guys fell on the bed, both of you?
Yes.
Let me go back real quick and ask you about this knife. Did you leave this knife on the dresser?
No.
Do you have hunting knives laying around when you have this four-year-old walking around?
No, I do not.
Are you the type of person to keep a knife on the dresser?
No.
How about under a mattress?
No.
While you guys are struggling, did Nicholas do anything to your face?
He took the inside of my cheek and he started to rip the flesh from the inside out. And he told me, I'm going to rip your face off.
Did Megan come back?
Megan and Greg stepped into the room, yes.
He claimed that Nicholas had placed his hands around his throat and then pulled out a gun. According to Adam, he then noticed a knife on the dresser and managed to grab it to defend himself. He alleged that he used the knife to stab Leonard three times. During the tussle, he told the jury that Megan and Greg came into the bedroom and Greg had a gun.
Megan, she screamed out, Dad, shoot him, Dad.
Did he have anything in his hand? I'm talking about Greg?
A rifle in his hand.
Where was it pointed?
At my chest.
Did Nick do anything when he saw that rifle pointed at you?
He moved out the way. He was still pinning me down, my legs. Out of the way so Greg could have a clear shot at my chest.
Did you say anything to Greg?
I asked Greg. I said, please, Greg, don't shoot me, Greg. Don't do this, Greg.
Did Greg pull the trigger?
Yes, he did.
What happened?
It misfired.
What was going on after the gun misfired?
He was trying to get it to work again, and he repeated the steps of trying to shoot me again.
Tell me what was going on with Nick while Greg is messing with this gun. Is he getting stronger or weaker?
He seemed to be weakening.
Was he bleeding a lot?
There was a lot of blood. He was bleeding a lot from his arm.
Did Greg ever shoot the gun again the second time?
Yes, he pulled the trigger again.
And what happened?
It was a misfire again.
Tell us what happens between you and Nick Leonard.
As Greg was continuing to try to shoot the gun again, Nicholas loosened his grip on his gun, and I was able to get it out of his hands.
Did you or him shoot the gun?
Yes, a shot went off towards the wall.
Okay. While you guys were struggling for the gun?
Yes.
And you said it went toward the wall?
It went through the wall.
Did it put a bullet hole through the wall?
Yes.
Tell us, was there a second shot?
Yes. As I grabbed the gun, I shot it towards Nicholas.
Was Nick still bleeding from the stab wound?
Yes, he was.
You and Nick are struggling. Greg has shot the gun twice. Wasn't able to get it to kill you.
Yes.
What happened with Greg and Megan?
They ran back to his bedroom, the master bedroom.
Did you know what was in that master bedroom?
He had a bunch of weapons in his closet.
Adam claimed that Megan told her father to shoot him and that Greg had attempted to fire the gun, but it didn't go off. Next, Adam claimed that he was able to grab the gun from Nicholas and fire the weapon towards Megan and Greg. He described how Megan and Greg ran out of the bedroom and headed towards the master bedroom. Adam claimed that he believed that they were going to retrieve another gun from the master bedroom to shoot him.
Did you chase after him?
Yes.
Why?
I felt that he was going to get another weapon and try to kill me.
When you got to the master bedroom closet, what was Greg doing?
He was attempting to load another weapon.
What did you do?
I shot him in his lower back as he was trying to turn around with his weapon.
Did he go down then, or did he turn around?
No, he had the weapon in his hand, and I shot him again.
Did he go down then?
Yes.
As you leave the master bedroom closet, tell us what happens next.
As I was leaving the closet, I could see someone in my peripheral, and it was Megan, and I thought she had something in her hand. And I just reacted and I shot her.
Where was she at?
She was by the door around a corner.
And did she have something in her hand?
Yes.
What was it?
I later found it to be a cell phone.
He said that he followed Megan and Greg and shot Greg from behind. He said that he fired a second shot in the chest. According to Adam, after killing Greg, he fired the gun towards Megan, but missed. He said that the bullet hit the wall, ricocheted, and then struck Megan in the head.
I lost it completely. I just realized that I killed the woman that I love, the mother of my child. And at that point, I realized that Tristan no longer had a mother, he no longer had a grandfather, and he no longer had me. And at that point, I felt like my life was over.
In that moment, Adam said that he was furious at Nicholas, who he blamed for starting the attack. He told the jury that he went back to the bedroom and beat Nicholas to death with the hammer. As the murders had unfolded, Maggie was at work. So Adam said that he went and checked on Tristan before waiting in the garage for Maggie to come home.
I went down to the garage with the hammer that I used on Nicholas, and I killed Margaret in the west garage hallway.
You ran down the stairs and met her down there?
Yes, I did.
How did you kill her?
I hit her over the head a few times.
How many times did you hit her?
I can't remember. It was maybe more than three times.
Was it necessarily with the end of the hammer that...
I can't remember.
Was she standing up when you first hit her?
Yes.
And you said, where did you say that was?
The west garage hallway.
Is there only one hallway like that downstairs?
Yes.
Tell us about the blood.
There was blood everywhere. To prevent more blood from getting everywhere, like what happened to Nick, I put a bag over her head to keep blood from getting everywhere.
Adam told the jury that he was paranoid and convinced that Maggie would try to kill him, so he armed himself with a hammer and beat Maggie to death when she entered the garage. He told the jury that he had placed a bag over Maggie's head because he did not want to get blood everywhere. Adam said that after killing the four victims, he left Tristan alone in the home while he went out to purchase a shovel. He said that he had tried to bury the bodies, but was unsuccessful in digging a hole big enough. The story was absolutely ludicrous. Prosecutors said that his story and the timeline of events did not add up. Under cross-examination, the prosecutor said, "The story you have just told this jury, you have had 3 years. more than 3 years, and the entire time of watching the evidence come by in this trial to come up with this story that you told, right? Adam replied with, "It's the truth." Adam's chilling testimony was easily the most difficult part of the trial. As Nicholas's father later said, there was a lot of anger going on back there. We were all pretty upset about it. Adam's defense attorney tried to put Adam back on the stand the following day, but Judge Mary Hansel said that the additional questions were not relevant. In closing arguments, prosecutors worked on discrediting Adam's version of events. They argued that there was no self-defense claim and emphasized that Adam had enough time since the crime to come up with his story. During the defense's closing argument, Adam's attorney told the jury that the prosecution had not proved first-degree murder. They said that manslaughter or second-degree murder would be more appropriate and said that Adam was either defending himself or acting in the heat of passion. Ultimately, the jury discounted Adam's version of events, and after just 3 hours of deliberation, they found him guilty on 4 counts of first-degree murder. Adam showed no emotion as the verdict was read out. The sentencing phase was to follow, which would pave the way for the family members of the victims to speak of their trauma and heartbreak. Assistant State Attorney Chris Labruzzo said that they would proceed with their plan to seek the death penalty. If the jury recommended death, the law now required a unanimous decision, as I mentioned in an earlier episode. Nicholas's father, Daniel Leonard, said, "Either way, his life is over, and basically, that's all we can really ask for, to keep him off the streets, because obviously, he was not a very good person." During the sentencing phase, prosecutor Chris Labruzzo reminded jurors of the brutality of the murders. He said that the murders were especially heinous, atrocious, and cruel, and would outweigh the mitigating factors from Adam's life that his defense team would be hoping would save his life. Adam's attorneys had hoped that if they were to call a few witnesses to defend his character, they could save him from the death penalty. The first witness to take the stand was Rose Mattos, Adam's mother. She told the jury that she loved her son no matter what he did and no matter what happened, but said that she was extremely hurt, like any parent in the same situation would be. She told the jury that Adam had a tough upbringing. He and his brother, Peter DeJesus, were often left home alone for long periods of time as they bounced from home to home. She also described how Adam had been bullied in school.
We moved a lot of times. More than 10 times, maybe 12.
10 to 12 times?
Yes.
Why is that?
I was looking for better schools. The environment wasn't really great.
What do you mean by that when you said the environment wasn't great?
He was bullied. He was bullied in first grade, second grade, third grade. And I just continued to look for better schooling for him.
She said that Adam never really knew his father and had grown up around his abusive grandfather.
My dad, he was alcoholic. He was verbally and physically abusive. He used to scare Adam, and it's a pop, don't scare him. He's just a little boy. Every kid don't like to be scared, especially when they have to go to sleep by themselves at night. And my dad would say, "Cuckoo's going to come and get you." Cuckoo means the monster's going to come get you. And Adam would just run behind me. And he did it a couple times where it was tough to see Adam, you know, frightened. He was frightened.
Did Adam ever see any abuse of you by your father?
Yes.
Such as what?
One day my dad came home and he was drunk. He wanted to have sex with a woman in my apartment. And I told him, "You can't do that in my house. I have 2 boys I have to protect and they don't need to see stuff like that." So my dad pretty much, he pushed the boys. The boys were trying to protect me, pushed the boys out of the way, almost knocking Adam out. And he ran after me with a knife.
How did that affect Adam?
It affected both of them. They didn't want to be there. They didn't want to be there in the apartment anymore. They didn't know when he was going to come back. So we pretty much had to move from there.
She said that despite all of Adam's problems, he loved Tristan and was a good father. His brother, Peter, also testified. He told the jury that what Adam had been convicted of was extremely shocking. He said that despite this, he still loved and supported his brother and would continue to do so. A number of other people testified that Adam was a good father. However, Adam had left Tristan home alone with the decomposing bodies on several instances. First, when he went to purchase the shovel, and then again when he went to a local bar and went to a neighbour's house to have a beer. Under cross-examination, the witnesses struggled to answer Prosecutor Labruzzo's question, "Does it change your opinion of Mr. Mattos as a good father to learn of all these things that happened while his son Tristan was still in the house?" Other members of the Brown family testified about their heartache. Greg's brother, Richard, said that he was haunted by the suffering. He said, "In my nightmares, I see him, trembling and shaking, to find and load his rifles. His hands shaking so much, he's hardly able to get a shell into his gun to defend his family. To this day, I can still feel his helplessness and shock as the murders were unfolding in front of him." Nicholas's mother, Paula, wept on the stand as she described holding her son's ashes in her hands every day, just like when she cradled him when he was a baby. The prosecution once again called on Dr. Palmer, the pathologist, to detail the injuries that the victims had sustained. James Sigler, Megan's boss at the Fisherman's Shack, read out text messages that he had received from Megan on the morning of her death. It read, "Jerry, some serious shit is going on. My son's dad tried to kill me with a knife and threatened to finish me off. My son's dad came home last night and he put a knife to my throat and told me he was going to fucking kill me." The text message was damning to Adam's claim that he had killed the family in self-defense. Following the testimony, Adam was given the opportunity to make a statement.
"I would just like to say I'm sorry to the victims of the family. I know that's not enough, but I just would like to make peace and hope that they don't hold on to that hate in their heart, because a heart filled with hate is not free. I'm truly sorry."
After all of the witness testimony was heard, it was up to the jury to decide whether to sentence Adam to death or to life imprisonment. 10 out of 12 jurors voted for him to be sentenced to death, but without unanimous agreement, Adam was automatically sentenced to life in prison. After the Florida Supreme Court ruled that juries in capital murder cases must be unanimous, death sentences had become few and far between. For example, in 2012, 22 people were sentenced to death in Florida, and then in 2015, that number had dropped to 9, and then in 2016, it dropped even further to just 3. The unanimous decision in a death penalty case has been a long time coming. The death penalty had been the subject of much debate in Florida over the years, and many called for it to be abolished. Opponents cite the high cost of a death penalty trial and the subsequent appeals, as well as the risk of executing an innocent person. In fact, Florida leads the nation in the number of innocent people freed from death row. Adam Mattos remains behind bars and will remain there until he passes away.
"I once was Tristan's cousin, but I now legally am his sister. My mother, Rebecca Thomas, is now legally his mother. You should know this. You signed the papers to allow my mother to adopt him, and thank God for that. We, as in my entire family, my aunts, my uncles, my cousins, grandparents, we adore him. We get to watch him grow. We get to listen to his infectious laugh, and we get to see his bright, beautiful smile. We get to see his schoolworks, his projects that are posted up all around our house, in whatever spot he chooses, because he is our king. And we, in fact, will never do anything to hurt him or put him in harm's way. He is loved, he is special, and he has a family. We're trying to fill the void that he feels with the loss of his best friend, his mother, as well as his grandparents. I'm sure that you would like to think that with his autism, Tristan would be able to forget that what you've done. But I promise you, he is not. He tells us daily what he saw and what he remembers. He tells us things along the line as, Daddy made a boo-boo on my mommy's head, and there was a lot of blood. And he tells us things like, and then he put him in a car, and they were all gone, and he never saw them again. He tells us how scared he is of his father, that he is a bad man, and I tell him, Tristan, I agree. I hug him, and I get to console him. You do not. He makes my mother promise him, when they say their prayers every night, that she will never leave or hurt him. He is terrified of you, Adam. So I hope when you put your pillow on the bed to sleep at night, you know that your son that you loved and tried to keep safe no longer does feel safe when he thinks about you. He in fact tells us he does not. He has told us on countless occasions that my daddy is in jail and he will never get out and he can never hurt me. Or tells us that my daddy made boo-boos on my feet when he made me walk for so long. That would be referring to when you made him run out of the house without shoes, causing large painful blisters on the bottom of his feet that my mom had to tend to once he got back to New Jersey. He tells us how thirsty and how hungry he was when he was with you. There's things that remind him of his other mommy, as he calls her, referring to his beautiful, loving mother, Megan. Certain foods, certain snacks, certain juices, he'll smile from ear to ear saying, my other mommy used to give me this. It breaks my heart that he has to refer to the person that he loved the most in this world and the person who loved him the most in this world as his other mommy. I saw Megan with Tristan more times than I can count, and I can only pray that one day I could be half of a mother as she was. He loves his mother, he loves his grandparents, and he loves us. He does not love you. He saw what you did, he heard what you did. You did not keep him safe. And you did not care about him. You stole his whole world. You ruined his whole life. And we are here to pick up the pieces. We love him. Thank you for the gift of Tristan.
Adam Maddox had been triggered by jealousy and a failed relationship that he refused to walk away from. He took advantage of the hospitality of the Brown family and then repaid them in the most horrific way possible. In the wake of the murders, Tristan was taken into custody by Child Protection Services and then sent to live with relatives before finally being adopted. As Tristan develops into a young boy, he continues to show the emotional scars of what his own father, the man who should have been his protector, put him through. Well, guys, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'd like to take a second to say a big, massive thank you to my amazing new Patreon supporters, Clayton DeLong, Joe Ambrosio Hall, and Brian E. Macri. I'm eternally grateful for all of the support, and it seriously does help this one-woman podcast. If you'd like to support the show in return for exclusive episodes of Morbidology Plus, early release episodes, ad-free episodes, and other goodies, then please check out Morbidology on Patreon or Himalaya Plus. I have some exciting new stuff coming up on Patreon soon, and I'm excited to share it with you. You can join for as little as $1 per month. Can I also ask that if you enjoy Morbidology, please consider leaving me a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening. Also, make sure you visit us at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. And stay tuned to the end of this episode to hear a promo for the amazing true crime podcast, Reverie True Crime. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.
My name is Paige, and I'm the host of Reverie True Crime. Reverie means to daydream, but even daydreams can become nightmares. Come join me and get lost in horrific Reverie about true crimes and eerie events. Reverie True Crime Podcast, available wherever you stream your favorite podcasts.